Hello, this is Michael Stone, the host of Conversations. We're committed to bringing you leading-edge thinkers in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. On our program, we look for positive solutions to local and global issues that leave you touched, moved, and inspired to action. Our weekly guests include local and global experts and concerned citizens working together to heal the wounds that separate, alienate, and marginalize people. Welcome to Conversations. This is your host, Michael Stone. I am thrilled to bring a local boy back to life. Daniel Giammario is the founder of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, linking astrology and astronomy with an experiential, ceremonial, and shamanic framework. He particularly loves working with ancient megalithic, neolithic, and indigenous traditions and connecting them with the current age, ceremonially intending to create a renaissance, accessing ancient knowledge to inspire a global and sustainable future. Daniel, great to have you on the show.
Oh, Michael, I'm glad. Glad to be talking with you. And yeah, you know, I had those years where I lived right there, and I came to love KVMR a lot. It was actually, I was mentioning to you the shows I used to be on, but I was also on a fourth show. I was often doing music shows with who then was known as Rick O'Shea, you know, so.
Ricochet, right.
Yeah, right. And music shows about all of our favorite artists. Those were really fun to do, actually, also.
Awesome. Well, I know a lot of people are listening from there now, and they probably wonder what happened to you, and you're down in the Philippines. Tell us about that move, just so we can catch up with your life.
Well, there have been so many moves since I lived there. I mean, I lived in Portland for 5 years. I lived in Southern Arizona, and we'd go back and forth between Southern Arizona and Hawaii. Lived on the Big Island, lived on Maui, all those different places. And then about 7-8 years ago, on Maui, I met a woman who was from the Philippines, but I met her on Maui. And then after a few years of you know, checking out to see whether we could live in Arizona or in Hawaii, we decided to live in the Philippines. And it gave me an opportunity to do something I always threatened to do, which was to become an expat. And so I'm a permanent resident over here now, and I don't come to the U.S. that often, actually, but I still do huge numbers of phone sessions, and I'm the founder emeritus now of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. I'm not doing quite as much hands-on management of that. And the school continues to expand. The astrological paradigm that I created back from the 80s onward is doing really quite well. So it's good being over here. We have a house in the mountains, which is not even like the Philippines at all. It's 12 hours north of Manila, up about 5,000 feet. I call it Ireland in Asia, actually. So we have that place. It's an indigenous area, non-Catholic, non-colonial, non-Hispanic, and so on. And then we have a family house outside of Metro Manila.
Wonderful. The amazement of technology. It's one of the great things about technology that we can communicate like this all the way to the Philippines and doing the Shamanism Global Summit. By the way, I've been working on that. And if somebody wants to get a pass to that, just send Michael at Well of Light, send me a email, and I'll send you a link. That's going to be in July with different shamanic teachers and mystics and sangomas from all around the world. And Daniel is on that also. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's great. You're doing double duty here on the air. So let's talk about shamanic astrology. Not too many people put those two things together. What is it? Tell us a little bit about that and how it developed for you.
I can explain in some detail here how this particular paradigm operates. I mean, there are other people out there that will describe the kind of astrology they do as shamanic, What I'm referring to, it's the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School and the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm, which is a very specific way of using astrology. The reason we call it Shamanic Astrology in our school is because it's experiential. Basically, our view is that if you don't know the sky and you don't know the land and you don't actually have a physical and kinesthetic experience with our environment, as above, so below, then it's only some sort of mental game that people are playing, you know, based on, you know, certain dogmatic rules. So we want to have a relationship directly with the planetary energies and with the energies associated with the seasons and the cycles of the land and sky. So there's that experiential element. We don't train anyone in the school to be an astrologer unless they also do know the night sky. And so it's a way of linking back to the time when astronomy and astrology were really the same thing. And most of the people that in the Western tradition I think of as great astronomers, they actually were also astrologers. You know, even people like you know, Sir Isaac Newton and, you know, all Kepler, you know, all these different people, they were astrologers. So the shamanic astrology, so part of it is the fact that it's experiential and it's working with the land and the sky directly. And secondly, we do a lot of ceremony with the timings. Like right now, we're speaking right around the exact point of the solstice, the June solstice. I was outside placing a stone exactly where the sun was coming up this morning, and you know, so there's people work with the seasons that way. Also, something coming up with Mars. I mean, Mars is soon to be brighter than it's been since 2003, and there's this remarkable ceremonial opportunity coming up July 26th, that the total lunar eclipse, when Mars on that very day will be at its closest and brightest, and it'll be right next to the full moon in Aquarius. So that's a second example. The third reason would be that the direct experience of these energies will inform us that our journey is not up and out. Not to go to the transcendent, to not leave the physical plane, although we can journey. But the purpose of life is to bring spirit into matter. So it's a journey of involution. We celebrate being human. We're not trying to become angels. We're not trying to get out of the body, but rather to use a system that allows us to bring the fullness of our consciousness into the body, into the emotions, into the density of third dimensional reality that we find ourselves in. So it's an involution journey. And I think all shamanism is like that. I mean, even Tibetan Bun shamanism, which the Dalai Lama elevated to be on equal plane to the other theocratic Buddhist traditions, he outraged them by doing that because that version of shamanism would say, we give thanks for unlimited number of lives. We pray for as many lifetimes as possible, you know, because this is where the action is. This is where we can grow. This is where we can learn. You know, so that's another way of explaining why the tag shamanic goes on to this form of astrology. But aside from that, the paradigm itself is quite a bit different from a more mainstream sun sign astrology. Mm-hmm.
So just before we get into that part, so it's really an animistic practice, not the giant clock perspective of, I thought Kepler had that, but I know Newton and Descartes had that. So it's really looking at the soul of the elements and the universe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 It's, it is about the soul, the way that, soul is really understood. I mean, sometimes people, in a sloppy way, equate soul with spirit. You know, it's like, what do the people mean by soul? Well, you have to have a living being to have a soul. A spirit comes in to the land, into the animals, into humans, and we're ensouled that way. That's, you know, even Jung talks about, you know, the anima mundi, you know, the soul of the world, you know, so we're celebrating our human experience, you know, not trying to get out of it. It's not like that latter Buddhist perception, you know, that we got to get off the wheel.
Yeah. So you were starting to talk about the fact that this kind of shamanic astrology doesn't focus so much on the sun signs, but go ahead and can you deepen that expression and how yours is different in looking at the ascendants and the path behind and before us?
Yeah, when people place so much emphasis on sun signs, they're actually it's like a fashion. It's a fashion since the 1800s to categorize everyone within a certain month. And pretty much anyone, I mean, in fact, most of the people who are critical of astrology, and rightly so, if they're dealing with sun sign astrology, is how in the world can you possibly say that everybody born within a certain month has the same characteristics? I mean, it's a so shallow way of looking at it. The whole sun sign thing came about from a couple of journalists who realized that they could sell newspaper columns, you know, by putting a date range, and then people could relate to the certain generalities. My own experience, as well as the experience of many of the earlier astrological traditions, put more emphasis on the moon, on the ascendant, particularly the ascendant, if you have a birth time. And one of the innovations of our school is that at our current time period, we can look at Venus and Mars in a way that really helps understand what our relational life is, but also even more importantly, to create wholeness. We have something we've developed in our school called the Inner Sacred Marriage Process. It's a way of gaining wholeness by working with the projected images of Venus and Mars. I mean, the ancients would have thought of it as the gods and goddesses, right? In more current time frame, it's the archetypes, you know, the projected psychological archetypes. But it's really the same thing. And so different ones are projected by different kinds of people. You know, so we work with Venus and Mars. The ascendant is a symbol for life purpose, the school of life we're signing up for. And the moon is not female. I mean, the moon is lineage. It's like we've come from that tribe. The moon represents our past, and whether the past could be thought of as our DNA, our family history, could be thought of as a mythic sense of past life themes, that these factors tend to be far more indicative of the soul's journey than, hey, I'm a Taurus, or you're a Libra, so therefore you're a certain way, you know. And this is extremely shallow way of relating to astrology, and you know. So we try to the other factor, Michael, is that sun sign astrology is also a way of enshrining patriarchy. You know, sun sign is, you know, like basically monotheism. You know, there's this one solar god that rules all others. And shamanic astrology is not only animistic, as you said, but it's also polytheistic. The soul, the psyche, is polytheistic. There are many different characters in there. And it's not just the solar god monotheistic principle that, you know, the other problem was that then much of traditional astrology was definitely male-dominated. There was only two planets that had a connotation of anything feminine. While in shamanic astrology, we see both masculine and feminine in all the signs and in all the planets. Right.
I'm curious about the impact of colonialism on shamanism, and was there a kind of parallel with that, with colonialism, the church, the complete outreach of the masculine?
Well, that would certainly be true in Catholic countries, like here in the Philippines. Many of the principles that we use in shamanic astrology don't work so well here. You have to put an entire Catholic, but also Cancerian overlay on everything that's done here. I mean, there are certain traditional assumptions that make it difficult for people to relate to some of the other characteristics of the soul's journey. However, this certainly works quite well in every part of the world if a person is not constrained by, and what how you put it, you know, colonialism, but also, you know, whether it's Islam or whether it's more fundamentalistic versions of Christianity. The irony is that the largest collection of astrology books that exists on the planet is in one of the basements of the Vatican. You know, so they know very well about astrology, but they essentially, most of the people around here think, oh, the Bible says that astrology is is of the devil. It doesn't say that anywhere. You know, but that's a part of the assumption.
Yeah. You know, I want to jump into a little bit about these times that we're in.
Right.
So much change and turmoil, old systems collapsing, anger, fear. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that in an astrological context so we can make sense of what's happening?
The largest answer to that from an astrological and astronomical perspective is a way of seeing the historical process through the largest cycle that our human senses can apprehend from one lifetime to the next. And that's the precessional cycle. It's that cycle based upon the tilt and the wobble of the Earth, our Earth's sacred movements in space. There's a 23.5 degree tilt, and then there happens to be this wobble that creates different north stars over the 26,000 year cycle. Now, there's ways of dividing that up. One of the ways of dividing it up was 12 constellations, you know, so then you have the 12 ages that's related to some of the conversation people have heard of, like, you know, the age of Aquarius, you know, or the age of Pisces. Every couple thousand years, there'll be a different age. But there's also a way of dividing that 26,000 year, the great year, into seasons. So if you go back about 13,000 years, that's halfway back. If you go back about 6,500 years, then that's one quarter turn. And there's rather major turning points. 13,000 years ago was all those events that we're becoming more and more aware of now, of the lower Dryas, the 1,000 years of everything freezing up again, and then the very quick melting and the rising of the sea levels. And the only thing people aren't sure about is exactly what was the mechanism. Was it a comet strike? Was it volcanism? Was it solar activity? A combination of all of it. Then 6,500 years ago or so, didn't happen in 1 year, was essentially the beginning of written language and the elimination of oral history. You know, so you basically have the beginning of what we would call history happening around that time. And that has now reached another turning point now. It's up for grabs as far as what's going to come out of this. In other words, there's one tendency out there. We could call it technocracy. We could. It's sort of the ego of Aquarius, which is that we'll create a global brain, a silicon global brain. We'll create AI everywhere, and then we can live forever because we can download our consciousness into a microchip, you know, and then we live forever. Of course, who's going to determine who gets to do that will be, you know, some elite group. It's so completely undemocratic. So that's one thing that could happen. You know? But then again, you know, I think that ultimately that one woman, the planet Earth, mm-hmm. as a living being, mm-hmm. will have something to say about this. You know, so we don't know what may happen, but certainly, if any, the current civilization, which I actually call it the triple aberration of the current civilization. I mean, basically, the last 3,000 or 4,000 years are very different than what previous human history was. The last 3,000 or 4,000 years, we have the hierarchical patriarchy. We have patrilineal family descent. And we also have fundamentalistic monotheistic religions. That's in the last couple thousand years. These are aberrations. It's not evolution. And that brings us to a different view of where we are in the cycles. This comes from India. You know, the more recent research has seen that that the actual end of the Kali Yuga is in 2025, which almost entirely corresponds to a completely different framework on where, quote, Western civilization is at, which is that 2020 to 2025 is considered to be the end of the American saeculum, which is basically the whole thing where you can see how these generations turn over entirely about every 90 years. And big turning points in the United States happened about every 90 years, you know, from the Revolution to the Civil War to World War II. And we're coming up to another one of these points that if we look at the U.S. chart, for example, this is another astrological thing. If you look at the U.S. chart, the United States has its Pluto return, when Pluto returns to its original place in about 2023, 2024. And that's basically a point of composting. You know, it's a reset. A reset point of some kind is absolutely essential. We just don't know exactly how it's going to happen. But I think most of us, with some degree of awareness, know that the trajectory we're currently on is unsustainable. Is not going to work on this planet. You know, so our view in shamanic astrology is to reanimate, to reconnect with the planet Earth. I think we've talked about this before, Michael. It's like it goes back to my own mentor in the early 70s, Dane Rajar, who was the great astrologer at that time period, who inspired so many of us who were part of the astrological renaissance at that time, which he said that the humans, where we're at, is part of a dialectic. So you would have the thesis, which is more clan, tribe, no individuals, really. Mm-hmm. And then you would have, in around 600 BC, and it was symbolized by the Uranus-Neptune-Pluto conjunction, which is really rare, is that all of a sudden around the world you have, the Chinese, you know, Lao Tzu, Confucius, you have Plato, Socrates, you have the Buddha, you have Zoroaster, you have Pythagoras, you know, all these individuals show up, and then you have individual consciousness. It's not long after that the individual birth chart happens. You know, before that there were no personal horoscopes, okay? Mm-hmm. But then that's the antithesis to the thesis. And Rajar said it would be absolutely essential now, if we are to make it as a species, to reach a synthesis, which he called the planetarization of consciousness. That basically we reconnect to our whole global family, and that includes the animals and the plants and the biosphere, the noosphere, all these different parts of the living organism, and that we take the benefits of developing individual consciousness and bringing it back into the collectivity of all global humanity and the Earth itself. And we got to go in that direction. I mean, that's what I certainly putting my energies into, and our school is committed to that. Not like, okay, we need, you know, the experiment is over, the body is not necessary, or as Freeman Dyson put it, you know, we're going to become a monospecies, Darwinism is finished, doesn't matter if the animals and the plants are gone, because, you know, we basic humans are all there is, you know, and that's okay. I don't know if I want to live that way.
I don't know if I want to live that way. I think most of us don't. So, well, one thing that you're saying there that really intrigues me, as much as we talked in the beginning about how there's fear and things are falling apart and there's chaos and distraction, there's also at the same time a real raising of consciousness, awareness of this interconnection. I mean, we have so many people on the summit, on the Shamanism Global Summit, that show up really ready to receive this. So it appears that consciousness is evolving in the human species, not just little points of light here and there, Jesus, Mohammed, or you know, people awakening, but there seems to be an evolution of consciousness itself that's happening, that more and more people are waking up to the interconnection, to the interbeing of our species with all life.
Well, I certainly hope so. The what you're bringing up there is actually it's both a tenet of mystical Christianity as well as esoteric astrology, which is that one of the deeper meanings of the quote Age of Aquarius, right, is that it's all of us, not just several illumined beings that then take it on for everybody else. But if there's such a thing as the second coming, it's really the recognition that we all have that, and it's not waiting for some guru or some one enlightened master to show up and take it on for everybody else. That the DNA is available for anyone who wants to go there.
Yeah. I think part of that right now, too, is that there are so many courses and so many people that are looking for, well, what's my purpose? What's my destiny? What am I here for? And you talk a lot about that, about the discerning your original intent.
Yes.
Can you talk about that and that path of awakening to that?
The shamanic astrology paradigm is rather resonance with Jung's view that the fundamental human need is to discover meaning and purpose. And these days, this is the thing people are most interested in knowing about. Why am I here? Is there something that I can do to fulfill my life? A way I can be to fulfill my life. And in our approach, there are ways of looking at the chart to get clues. But it's like being able to discern a set of instructions. We do have the belief here that the idealism here that every birth chart is the exact perfect set of instructions for the unfoldment of an individual soul, and that started with intent, that an individual in coming into the life, whether they remember it or not, had an intention when they came here. It's not a crapshoot. That's what we mean by intent here. We have the free will to either cooperate with it or not. Jung once answered that question so brilliantly. He was asked, "What's free will?" And so Jung says, "Free will. Oh, that free will means to gladly do what you must do."
That's great.
And human beings, unlike most other animals, don't have a choice to not be their own nature. I can't speak for certainty about cetaceans or cephalopods who may in fact be as conscious, if not more conscious, than us. But for the most part, the other animals can only be animals, while we can choose to be our true nature or not.
So many ancient cultures, if we look at the Inca or the Caro, which is a dying culture, but they, like many of the ancient cultures, you were named when you came in, and that name had a lot to do with you, the purpose that you were born into in the yes. in the Mayan cosmology. Your name meant something. Now we don't have that sense of purpose, mm-hmm. or that we were born, that this is what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. What happened there? How did that get lost? And how can shamanic astrology help us to find that kind of sense of, oh, this really is what I'm here to do?
Well, as far as what happened in the West, it was the whole movement to separate human beings from their connection to the land and the sky, to have us be overlords, to be separate from it, to consider it to be no better than a machine. I mean, some of the stuff written in the 15, 16, 1700s about that, it's just frightening. You can see like how the whole Western mindset happened. But I'll give you one example of what we do in the school. When a person is born, and this is particularly powerful if you know a person's birth time, what's coming up over the eastern horizon, the star, if there happens to be a star there, like on the ascendant, then that becomes a person's personal star. And then you could form a relationship mythically and experientially with that particular star. Like in my own case, the star that was coming up over the eastern horizon when I was born was the star Spica, which is the brightest star in the constellation of the Virgin Priestess. And I have a relationship with that star. And it does turn out that mythically, and many of the stories that are associated with that star, it is the star, the most important star in the sky, representing the powers, the strengths, the mysteries of the sacred feminine. It is that the ear of corn, the shaft of wheat, even in places like Bali, they have the exact same figure, but holding a rice paddy. It's the goddess of the earth. It's Gaia herself, and Spica is right there in the middle of the body of the Virgin Priestess, which is a constellational group that's always represented the feminine. It's called Virgo as far as the naming of the constellation, but it's a star group that is the sacred feminine. And I just found it amazing that's my star, and it's also guided my way. And the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School honors first principle, the feminine. And one of my side projects is the Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine groups, where I go to Ireland, I take people to Scotland, I go to the Wales landscape, these ancient areas where the living spirit of the Sacred Feminine still is alive.
I'm sure you've told me, but I'm going to have to come back and do a session with you to figure out what my personal star is saying, because I've forgotten if you have told me. But I want to mention, too, that you are doing, besides your trips, still doing a long distance consultation and readings for people. And what's the best way to get a hold of you if someone wanted to do a reading?
Well, there's several connection points. I mean, if they wanted to find out more about the school and the different courses we offer, it's the shamanicastrology.com website, right? I have my own website now, which is called thejamarioapproach.com. And then also, if a person wanted a session, I'm actually no longer taking new clients starting this year, but I am doing updates, and I have a pretty full practice, and so people can contact me directly by email. That's really the best way. DanielGiammario@gmail.com. And then you can do an update. And actually, my wife's mother is the person who does my scheduling. Her name is Yali.
That's great. Another subject that I'd like to talk about, Daniel, and that is the myth of separation. We talk about connecting with the elements and the seasons and the forces and the changes of through time. But when people are looking at shamanism and astrology and all these things that we've been talking about, they tend to look at it from an individual perspective, I, me, my, and that puts us into a frame of separation. you know, I mentioned the Karo. The Karo are a culture that had no sense of separation. There was none of those I, me, my in there. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like unity consciousness, or this, I don't want to make it a bumper sticker, but dissolving the I into the one, this larger sense of humanity coming together is what's necessary for the future of the species, for the possibility of the species.
Well, this is what we were referring to when I was given an example of what Rajar felt, mm-hmm. that it was, you know, tribal, and then clan and tribal, and then the development of we could say the innovation on the antithesis to that, which is the creation of me, I'm separate, I'm an individual, I can have my own individual enlightenment, and then the necessity for that to reconnect to everything, to everyone. You know, the same analogy, Michael, we can look at the process associated with the gaining of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. You know, that basically you come in undifferentiated. You come into the life in that nirvanic state of no separation, and then you're ripped from that. There's a huge separation that happens, and then in this great achievement that actually happens, it's kind of a miracle, really, that so many people are able to put together a functional identity in this world. You know, we could say they develop an egoic structure of some kind. Now, of course, we can become way over-identified with that, but in order to actually fully experience enlightenment, you first have to develop the ego. You know, you develop that structure so that at a certain point you break it down, and then you reunite, but on the basis of an awareness of what you've done. You know, as opposed to just being in a nirvanic womb, which you cannot actually know what it is that's happened unless you separate out of it and then go back in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, brilliant. I love that. So what about ancestral, the ancestors, first of all, but the ancestral patterns that are handed down, that we come into this world, I don't know how it is from an astrology perspective, but from the perspective that I hold about ancestor work, is that many of the things that we're working with are to heal what we came in with from the ancestral patterns, that this is our time to come to wholeness, come to fulfillment through the healing and honoring of the lineage that we come from, the ancient ancestors and the ones that are not so well in this life, perhaps not even passed over, but the unwell dead, as well as our patterns and the relationship of that. What's your thought about that perspective on ancestor work?
Boy, there's a lot of different layers to that. When we do our work in places like Ireland and Scotland, and go to the places 4,000 or 5,000 years old, and then we bring in our own personal lineages. So there is a forgiveness ceremony that we do. One of the things that the central view I hold regarding these, I'll just go down one direction here now, which is going to the ancient places prior to the triple aberration. Mm-hmm. I like to go directly back to when you didn't really have to cleanse or heal anything. You know, so basically you go back to when it was like in its own golden age, that there, before the warfare, before the domination, before the bloodletting, before the clans attacking clans, once the patriarchy thing came in. So many things are being learned about this now. The further back you go, you don't see armies. You know, you don't see weapons. You don't see fortifications. You see cooperation. I want to take us back there. Otherwise, you just get caught up in, oh, I'm going to clear this energy. I'm going to clear this energy. I'm going to clear this energy. Why not go back to before all that wounding happened? Now, we have to, of course, accept that it did happen, and then you can forgive, you know. But I'm trying to go back to the earlier lineages prior to the when all the, you know, the crap happened, you know.
Well, that's what I mean by the ancient ancestor. Mm-hmm. When I speak of that. But we have all of these ancestors through the colonial times and before that with the war for it, where the warfare and the patriarchy and all of this. And those patterns are handed down to us culturally, familially, and in our blood and our cellular nature.
Yes. Yeah. And so in when we look at a chart, and this will be the next avenue that I can take, is that there is a way of looking at the horoscope and to be able to pick up on what the storyline is that brought you into the conditions of the current life. Now, we make the assumption when we pick up that storyline that that was done well, you know, so that we are connecting into that place on the wheel of life. I mean, there's plenty of people even in patriarchy that live noble and heartful and good lives. You know, they were doing their best, you know, within the conditions that they were faced with. So we're looking at why we came in. What was the lineage skill set that we had when we came into the life? And we do not get caught up. I think this is related. We don't get caught up on a Christianized form of karma, you know. So that if you're going through something difficult in your life, it isn't because of you screwed up in the past, or it's not a punishment for anything. What you're going through is a way of unfolding your soul, of learning whatever lessons or teachings you're in the current life to learn about. So we try to get beyond the, you know, the blame victimization, looking at it as a reward and punishment, Christianized karmic approach, which is no different than the cult that runs our country, you know, that are basically Calvinists, you know, that if you're rich, you've already been approved of by God. If you're poor, well, you've already been judged a sinner. You know, I mean, it's gross.
It is indeed. Can you talk a little bit about free will? I'm really interested. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I'm this way because of DNA. And of course, epigenetics has pretty much destroyed that perspective. Other people say I'm that way because of my chart. There's this cop-out to our self-realization. Talk a little bit about the relationship of free will to destiny.
Well, if we go back in our conversation a little bit, I was using Jung's statement to dive into the subject. Free will means to gladly do what you must do. Now, we do believe this original intent includes, a set of instructions. Like while a human being has access to every astrological archetype, if we could look, I make the assumption and we'll look at somebody's chart, that who knows, they probably in the past, if we accept them, whether it's family, blood lineage, or whether it's past life themes, that we probably have done everything, you know, we played every possible role, you know, but still the set of instructions would suggest, and I guess you could say this would be the principle, the universe is supportive of human beings who cooperate or in alignment with what that original intent is. And that includes knowing what season it is, you know, so that if you happen to be in a Neptune cycle, you cannot expect to get anything actually done then. I mean, this doesn't take away your freedom. It's just saying be aware of what season you're in. You don't want to plant the corn in the middle of winter, you know, something like that. And then also it's helpful to know, like, say, your Mars position for a man or Venus position for a woman, because it doesn't necessarily mean that's how you initially are, but the more you would learn about that, the more power, strength, awareness, happiness, fulfillment will come into your life. It's like, go that direction. There's a little bit more sense of being on track by going in that direction. So we're not all the same. I mean, that's there's a very remarkable amount of variety on the planet. One of the things that got me involved in astrology in the first place was the fact that I born in 1948. I came out of the context of knowing what it was like in the late 50s and early 60s, which was unbelievably gray. You know, I mean, it was like no color. It's like that movie Pleasantville, you know,
right, where
they go back into the black and white sitcom and inject color into it, you know. So in the mid late 60s, then it's like, oh, there's all kinds of beings we can be, you know. There's a wide diversity to what it is to be a man or to be a woman, and we to go beyond the boundaries of any particular culture's version of the only possibilities available to a person, you know. So, and astrology is wonderful for that. If you get beyond the prejudices of who, you know, astrology can actually serve the limited agenda also. Sun sign astrology, the judgments people have for in favor of certain signs and against certain signs, you know, this keeps people in bondage as much as anything else. It's no different than saying men are supposed to be a certain way or women are supposed to be a certain way. I mean, that's a cultural overlay. It's not the reality.
Yeah. So many more questions, but we're getting close to the end of our time together, and I want to make sure that everything that you wanted to express gets expressed, and also, you know, any ideas or tips of how astrology can help people who are in miserable jobs they don't enjoy, but they stay there out of fear of what might be on the other side, and not stepping into their own fullness, and people dealing with so many really difficult circumstances these days. How can, you know, let's look at how they can benefit from this.
Two ways. One is that it's always empowering and helpful if a person hears the bigger story. You know, and particularly the story of what their life could be, what archetype they actually are, like a larger vision of what their life could be. And then secondly, it's the information about the timings they're in. I mean, if a person is in a job or a relationship that's absolutely completely difficult and or miserable or, you know, powerless, there's only certain times where it would make sense to change it. You see, I mean, a person could, there's timings, let's say, that are not good to, let's go through with the divorce, you know, wait until a cycle that is more, there's more support for that, you know, rather than just creating more problems. A person may, it's so helpful, let's say, for a person to know when it's time to do their sabbatical, you know, or when it's time to go to, you know, figuratively or literally to go to India, you know, or to put their focus on their spiritual path. And it doesn't even matter what they do in a more practical sense, you know, mm-hmm. that I'll say to some people, you know, this time period, it doesn't matter if you work 100 hours a week or 10, it won't make any difference. So make sure you do something else the other 90 hours, and don't be in self-judgment that you're not getting anything done.
Yeah, brilliant.
So those are just some simple examples about how it can really help. But ultimately, it's only designed to assist a person in being much more, more in charge of their own life, really, you know, being able to make decisions that are what their soul wants for them, as opposed to be under the thumb of a parent or the expectations of a culture or, you know, what other people say they're supposed to be. It's helping an individual more really be themselves. And we all want to be loved just for ourselves, you know, to be gotten. You know, so And so often for me, if I do a session for someone, frequently it's just that individual felt gotten. You know, wow, somebody got who I was. Wow. And that can be extremely liberating for someone.
Brilliant. Well, I'm so grateful for you to taking the time today to be with us here on Conversations, and just the tireless work that you do and the gift you are to the planet, Daniel Giammario. It's really wonderful to be with you today.
Well, thank you, Michael. I just love these conversations with you. You make it, you know, so easy for the flow is really good for talking with you.
Wonder. That's thank you, because that's very much my intention in the conversations I have. So we will talk again soon, I'm sure. And again, great thanks. I wanted to share something very exciting with you all, and that is that for the fourth year in a row, I will be doing and having the privilege of leading the Shift Network's Shamanism Global Summit. It's an amazing collection of people that I have put together over the entire year. I've been inviting and working with shamans, sangomas, wisdom thinkers from around the world, and I work with the Shift Network to put together 3 days, July 10th through 12th, and you can access this free webinar for those full 3 days. And I'm just really excited to share that with you. These are medicine people from all over the world, amazing luminaries and wisdom keepers, and they're very connected to the natural world. There's something that's happening, that's awakening. And if you listen to these people, I've got Sandra Ingerman and Alberto Violdo and John Perkins and Heather Ashimara, many people who have been on my show, but also some people that are really powerful shamanic practitioners that you may have never had or heard from other cultures, from Africa and South America, all over the planet. So if you want to tune in, just go to the welloflight.com and you can find it there, welloflight.com, and it's the Shift Network Global Shamanism Summit, and it will be airing July 10th to 12th. So I hope you'll join us on that. Again, it's a free 3-day workshop, and you'll be able to listen to wisdom keepers from all over the world. So thanks so much, and thanks for listening to Conversations. Bye for now. Conversations is an independently produced program supported by KVMR 89.5 Nevada City and listener contributions. We are committed to bringing you leading-edge thinking in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. If you would like to receive our complimentary newsletter, The Well of Light, make a contribution, or order any of our past shows, go to our website at rwelistening.net.